Well, good morning, or good afternoon, either or, right? So used to saying good morning rather than good afternoon. So, good afternoon. Turn to the book of Esther if you're not there, Esther chapter 1. And so today we're going to begin a study of the book of Esther. Esther is one of my very favorite books in the Old Testament. The book of Esther is exciting. It's suspenseful, and it's very entertaining. And you'll see that as we work our way through the book. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to read all the way through chapter 1. I'm going to make some comments along the way. And then I'm going to, hate to use this phrase because I heard it with the previous administration, then I'm going to circle back. You heard that right? I'm going to circle back, and then we're going to look at three things that I want to bring out of this text today. So where does the book of Esther fit in historically? Well, it fits into the period of time of the returning exiles. So it comes in right after the return of Zerubbabel and right before the return of Ezra. So that's where the book fits in. So this book is the history of the returning exiles. Now, this book is different from many books of the Old Testament because it's named after a woman, after Esther. There's another book in the Old Testament that's also named after a woman, and that's the book of Ruth, which is also a very, very good book. So it's unique in that regard. Now, just a couple of things. When you look at these books, we're going to kind of compare these two for just a moment. Ruth and Esther are both historical books. Right, so they fit into the period we in the Bible we call history. That's where they fit in. So they're very historical. Also, Ruth is a Gentile who marries a Jew. Esther is a Jew who marries a Gentile. So it's just the opposite, which is really interesting in my opinion. Esther marries into the line of Saul. King Saul, the tribe of Benjamin. Esther comes into the line of David, tribe of Judah. And so, and it's also interesting to see the book of Ruth begins with a famine, and the book of Esther begins with a feast. Just the opposite of the book of Ruth. And so, it's just interesting to sort of compare these two books and see how different they are. So what is the main emphasis of this book? I believe it is the salvation of the Jews. I think that's the main emphasis. Because, see, long before there was ever a Hitler, there was a Haman. And Haman sought to do what Hitler sought to do, annihilate, eradicate the Jewish people. And if you eradicate the Jews, if he had been successful in eradicating the Jews, there's no way that Jesus can come. Because Jesus is going to come through the Jews, right? And so if the Jews are wiped out, there's no Christ. And so saving the Jews is huge. So that's the main thing. But also, it's interesting because this book does not record the name of God. There are 10 chapters and you won't find God's name one time. You won't even find pronouns in reference to Him. He or Him. Right? You don't find any of those in reference to God in this book. Now that's interesting because this is a book in the Bible. And wouldn't you expect a book in the Bible to record the name of God? Yeah, you would, typically. So here's the question. You do have fasting in this book, but no prayer. Just fasting. Because remember, Esther's going to say, before she goes into the king, fast 3 days before I go before the king. And the Jews did. But it says nothing about prayer. This book seems to do everything it can to remove God, at least from the pages. But when you look at the history, God is all over the place. God is moving and working to save His people in such an amazing way. So what we see in this book is what we call the providence of God. Providence is different from miracles because miracles overturns the natural order. Providence works within the natural order. And so God doesn't change the way people think. He doesn't change the plans of people. He just works through them to accomplish His will. And that's incredible when you think about it. Because think about all the decisions that we people make. And God is behind the scenes working behind all our decisions so that ultimately His will is achieved. That's an amazing feat. That impresses me when I think about God. Think about all the people praying. Think about all the thoughts that people have, ideas that people have. And yet God is working behind the scenes and His will is perfectly accomplished in this book. But yet it doesn't mention God. There's no prayer. But you're going to see God is everywhere. Now, one other thing I want to, well, there are a couple things I want to point out. This book gives the origin of what we call the Feast of Purim. The Feast of Purim. It's not one of the biblical feasts. If you go to Leviticus 23, there are seven feasts that the Israelites were supposed to celebrate every single year. These are important feasts. This is an additional feast. And we'll talk about that feast when we get to it. So it just gives the origin of that feast. So there are several things. But also, the Apocrypha includes what we know as 107 verses. And it's called the Additions of Esther. So there's 107 verses that are in the Apocrypha. So if you look at the Septuagint, which is the Greek chant translation of the Old Testament, it has it. It has the Apocrypha in it. And so it has these verses. And so this book has 10 chapters. When you add those verses to it, it's now 16 chapters because it's chapters 11 through 16. That's what the 107 verses do. So it makes it 16 chapters. What's interesting about those verses is it mentions God 50 times, over 50 times. It also has Mordecai praying. He's the uncle to Esther. You don't have Mordecai praying in these 10 chapters. And you do not see the name of God in these 10 chapters. But they're in the Additions of Esther. Now, I don't think the Additions of Esther should be added to our Bible because it's Apocrypha. And Apocrypha is not Scripture. Therefore, it should not be included in the Bible. But I do think it's interesting. And why do you think that they sought to use the name 50 times and include prayer? Because they wanted this book to be a little bit more spiritual. Right? Because it doesn't come across as spiritual when there's no prayer, there's no mention of God, there's a whole lot of partying, and there's a lot of evil going on. So it just doesn't seem like it would be a book of the Bible. But it belongs, and it is an incredible book. Let's begin the study. So let's begin reading at verse 1. Now it came to pass in the days of Ahasuerus. This was the Ahasuerus who reigned over 127 provinces from India to Ethiopia. His Greek name is Xerxes. He is Xerxes the first. All right, that's the Greek name of Ahasuerus. Now notice it says he reigned over 127 provinces from India to Ethiopia. He has a vast kingdom. I mean, you're talking about India in the east and Africa to the west. This is a huge kingdom. Now the Hebrew has Cush for Ethiopia. So many people think Cush is a reference to Ethiopia, and that's why Ethiopia is there. If it isn't, it's still Africa, because Cush is Africa. So if it's not Ethiopia, it's still Africa. So this king has a kingdom from India to Africa. Think about how vast this kingdom is. And how powerful this man is. Verse 2 says, in those days, King Ahasuerus sat on the throne of his kingdom, which was in Shushan, the citadel. Now notice verses 3 and 4. That in the third year of his reign, he made a feast for all his officials and servants and powers of Persia, Media, the nobles, and the princes and powers being before him. When he showed the riches of his kingdom and his splendor of his excellent majesty for many days, 180 days. This guy had a 106-month party. That's what he had. a party that lasted six. Don't people have to go to work? I mean, how do you party for six straight months? And then, by the way, how do you follow up 6 months of partying? Well, you give it one more week. Of course, look at verse 5. And when these days were completed, the king made a feast lasting 7 days. For all the people who were present in Shushan, the citadel, from great and small, in the court of the garden of the king's palace. And there were white and blue linen curtains fastened in cords of fine linen and purple and silver rods and marble pillars. And the couches were gold, silver on a mosaic payment of alabaster, turquoise, and white and black marble. And they served drinks in golden vessels, each vessel being different from the other, with royal wine in abundance, according to the generosity of the king. King furnished all the alcohol for this party, according to the generosity of the king. In accordance with the law, the drinking was not compulsory. For so the king had ordered that all the officers of his household, that they should do according to each man's pleasure. But when the king drank, they had a drink. All right, so king took a drink, they had to take a drink. That's the way it worked. Verse 9, Queen Vashti made a feast for the woman in the royal palace, which belonged to King Ahasuerus. On the seventh day, when the heart of the king was merry with wine, in other words, he's drunk, he commanded Mahuman, Bitztha, Harbona, Bigtha, Abegtha, Zether, Carcass, 7 eunuchs who served in the presence of King Ahasuerus, to bring Queen Vashti before the king, wearing her royal crown, in order to show her beauty to the people and to the officials, for she was beautiful to behold. But Queen Vashti refused to come at the king's command, brought by the eunuchs. Therefore, the king was furious, and his anger burned. Then the king said to the wise men, who understood the times, for this was the manner toward all who knew the law and justice, those closest to him being Karshina, Maris, Marcina, and Mamukin, the 7 princes of Persia and Media who had access to the king, who ranked highest in the kingdom. And what shall we do to Queen Vashti? According to the law, she did not obey King Ahasuerus, brought to her by the eunuchs. And Mamukin answered before the king and the princes, Queen Vashti has not only wronged the king, but all the princes of all the people who are in the province of King Ahasuerus. For the queen's behavior will become known to all the women, so that they will despise their husbands in their eyes, and they will report, King Ahasuerus commanded Queen Vashti to be brought before him, but she did not come. So in other words, they're saying, hey, all the other women in the kingdom are going to see what Vashti did, and they're going to do that to their husbands, and they're not going to respect us like they should. We got to tap this down now. We can't let this go any further. That's basically what these wise men are saying. Verse 18. The very day the noble ladies of Persia and Media will say to the king's officials that they overheard the behavior of the queen, and thus it will be excessive contempt and wrath. If it pleases the king, let a royal decree go out from him, and let it be recorded by the laws of the Persians and the Medes, so that it will not be altered, so that Vashti will not come before King Ahasuerus. And let the king give her royal position to another who is better than she. So they're going to depose Vashti, and they're going to select another to be king, be queen. And that will be Esther, of course. When the king's decree, which he will make, is proclaimed throughout all his empire, for it is great, all wise will honor their husbands, both great and small. That's why this decree. Verse 21. And the reply pleased the king and the princes, and he did according to the word of Mamukin. And then he sent letters to all the king's provinces, and to each province in its script, that every people in their own language, that each man should be master in his own house and speak the language of his own people. Now, what the author is doing is he's simply setting the stage for Esther to become the next queen. I want to circle back, and I want us to look at three things. There are three things. Actually, there's more than that to come out of here, but we're only going to look at three. Number one, the sin of pride. The sin of pride. Go back to verses 3 and 4. Look at verse 3. That in the third year of his reign, he made a feast for all his officials and servants, and the powers of Persia and Media, and the nobles, and the princes, and the provinces being before him. When he showed the riches of his glorious kingdom, and the splendor of his excellent majesty, for many days, 180 days, and you can even add another week to that, so it's 187 days. For 187 days or over 6 months, he bragged about how powerful he was. He bragged about his riches. He bragged about his glory. 1 John chapter 2, verses 15, 16 says, love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. If any man love the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh and the lust of the eyes and the pride of life. This man is a case study in the pride of life. This is a proud man. Any man that spends 6 months saying, look at me, is a very proud man. And by the way, pride goes before destruction and a haughty spirit before fall. Pride is not a good thing. And what is pride? Pride is man's failure to acknowledge God. That's pride. That's pride. Every atheist has a pride problem. That's right. Remember Acts, the 12th chapter? Remember King Herod? King Herod got up and gave a speech. You remember what the people said? Oh, this is not the voice of a man. This is the voice of a God. It's the voice of a God. And what happened? King Herod didn't give God glory. King Herod didn't say, oh, wait a minute. I'm not God. God is in the heavens. I'm just a man. He didn't do that. And you know what God did? Smote him with worms. And he died. Why did he die? He didn't acknowledge God. This king fails to acknowledge God. God is the King of kings. This guy may be a king, but God is a king above him. God is the real king. And that's what you see in Isaiah 6. In the year that King Uzziah died, Isaiah says, I saw the Lord high and lifted up and exalted on his throne. And what was the point of that text? The text is telling us that the king isn't dead. Yeah, the earthly king is, but the true king who reigns over all, he's still alive and he still rules. And so this king had a pride problem. And pride is something a lot of us deal with. A lot of us can be proud people. And we have to be careful. Always acknowledge God. Always give glory to God. Because that's what people who love God and serve God do. But there's two other things I want to pull out of here. The second thing that I want to pull out of here is drunkenness. Drunkenness. Because what we see here is a six-month party. I mean, for 6 months, they're drinking and getting drunk. And I want you to notice, real quick, you know, when the king had enough wine and he was drunk, what does he do? He says, you know what? I think here's a good idea. I'm going to get my wife, who's the queen, and I'm going to have her dance before a bunch of drunken men. Well, that sounds like a great plan, does it not? Who wants their wife to dance and parade around in front of a bunch of drunken men? This king would have never asked her to do that if he wasn't drunk. It's because he was drunk. That's why he did it. The alcohol made him do it. And that's what happens. Alcohol has power over you. In fact, let me just share with you real quick in Proverbs 20, verse 1. Listen to what it says. Wine is a mocker. Strong drink, a brawler. Whoever is led astray is not wise. Did you hear that? Whoever is led astray is not wise. Alcohol will make you do things you wouldn't do normally. It lowers our inhibitions so that we can't say no. So, you know, right now, you're in a position where you could say no to sin. You could say no to temptation because you have all your faculties together. But when you're drunk, you don't have that ability. And you will do things you normally wouldn't do under those circumstances. Alcohol will make you do those things. And by the way, I think the king regretted banishing her. I think he regretted. Look at chapter 2, verse 1. And after these things, when the wrath of the king subsided, he remembered Vashti. Yeah, he did. He thought about her. And then it says he thought about what had been done to her. You think he had some regrets? Because he did this in a drunken state. He didn't do it, you know, when he had all his faculties about him. He did it while he was drunk. And now that he's sober, he's thinking, oh my goodness, Queen Vashti? And we've banished her. And that can't be undone because the law of the Medes and Persians, once you do, you can't undo it. It's done. It's forever done. Even when Esther says, undo, you know, this terrible harm that's going to come against the Jewish people, he couldn't. Because you can't undo the law of the Medes and Persians. But he did give the Israelites the ability to fight against the enemies. But he couldn't undo it. And so this can't be undone. He can't say, oh, I was drunk. I made a terrible mistake. I want to undo it. He can't. She's forever gone. She was a beautiful woman. And he's thinking about her. And I think he's having regrets. At least that's how I read chapter 2, verse 1. You might read it differently. But I think he remembered her and he remembered what had been done. So why did she come to mind? Been thinking about her. That was his wife. That was the queen. He loved her. But in a drunken state, he did what he normally would not have done. And so will you. And so will I. In the book of Galatians, chapter 5, verse 21, Paul says this. Paul says, verse 21, envy, he's talking about the works of the flesh. Envy, murders, drunkenness, revelries, and the like, of which I tell you beforehand, just as I also told you in time past, that those who practice such things will not inherit the kingdom of God. Drunkenness is wrong. Drunkenness is a sin. Now, I know people, Paul told Timothy, don't drink any water anymore, but drink wine for your, notice he says, for your stomach's sake. And you're often infirmities. Timothy had stomach problems. And alcohol was good for those stomach problems. But he didn't tell him to get drunk. He says, a little wine. Not a whole bunch. Just a little. In other words, just enough, like medicine. We have medicine. We go to this drugstore and you get cough syrup. It has like 25% alcohol in some of those, right? I know they've reduced some of that now. But in a lot of those, they have alcohol content. Why? Because it's good for you for different problems. But too much is not good for you. Drunkenness is condemned. And you just do stupid stuff when you're drunk. Paul says over in Ephesians chapter 5, verse 18, he says, no longer drink wine, but be filled with the Spirit. No longer drink wine, but be filled with the Spirit. Be filled with the Spirit, because what you're filled with will determine how you act. If you're filled with wine, it will affect your walk, it will affect your talk. You will stagger, and you will stammer, and you will say a bunch of dumb things. Right? That's what you do when you're drunk. But if you're filled with the Spirit, it will affect your walk and your talk. Oh, you won't stagger and you won't say dumb stuff either. You will serve God and you will be faithful and you will live for Him. And you won't have to worry about perishing. One other thing I want to bring out of this text, and that's the sin of anger. Because I want you to see here, let's look at verse, beginning at verse 11. He says to bring the king before, or bring the queen Vashti before the king wearing a royal crown in order to show her beauty to the people and the officials. And she was beautiful to behold. Vashti refused to come at the king's command. I don't blame her, to tell you the truth. Brought by the eunuchs, therefore, notice, the king was furious and his anger burned within him. And when the idea was brought up, hey, let's banish her and let's select a new person to be queen. He's like, yeah, that's a good idea. Well, when you're drunk, it may sound like a good idea, but it's not a good idea. And so this man had anger issues. And he did stuff in anger that he wouldn't have done normally. So let's talk a little bit about anger. Because the Bible says in James chapter 1, verse 20, that anger does not bring about the righteous life that God requires. When you're angry, you tend to do dumb things too. Right? Anger can overcome you. And so Paul says in Ephesians chapter 4, verse 26 and 27, Paul says over there, he says, don't let the sun go down on your wrath, right? Be angry and sin not. Don't let the sun go down on your wrath. And then he says in verse 27, and don't give the devil a foothold. Well, anger is okay. It's a God-given emotion, just like fear, like love, like grief, like sorrow, like sadness. Those are all emotions. And they're all God-given, and everyone is okay in its proper place. And that is true of anger as well. Anger is not wrong if two things are true. Number one, you have the right motive to be angry. You get mad at, for no reason, that's not good. You get mad at somebody, and there's no reason to get mad at them, that's just stupid. So you have to have a good reason to be angry. You can't be angry just because you want to be angry. That's not proper. That's not the way anger should function in our lives. But secondly, it must be controlled. You got to control it. And that's what's meant by don't let the sun go down on your wrath. In other words, before this day ends, Paul says, get over it. Don't take it to bed and don't wake up with it. Get over it now. Because as long as you can control your anger, you're in good shape. But anger that's not controlled, what does it do? It's very destructive. Because you'll say things in anger. You'll blurt something out real quick in anger. And you maybe didn't mean it, but it's too late. It's out there. You can't take it back. They heard it. You can apologize and even be forgiven, but it's out there. And it's in the back of their head too. You said hurtful words, and you wouldn't have said those hurtful words if you wouldn't have been angry. But in anger. So when we're angry, we gotta be able to control this thing. Have reins like a horse, right? And pull back on that sucker when you need to. When your anger starts to get out of control, pull back on it. Just like you pull back on a horse, whoa, you know, to slow it down and stop it. You gotta have that kind of control with anger. Because you not only say stuff, you can be violent. I mean, how many times have you thrown stuff in anger? Anybody ever done that? Your tools? Working on the car, you know, wrench, and you, and it slips, and you crack your fingers, and what do? Throw that wrench, and yell, and scream, and rant, and rave, and that's anger getting away. That's anger getting away. Pull back the reins. Get control on this thing. Because if you want to give the devil a foothold in your life, anger is one of the ways you do that. He will control you. You won't have control over yourself. Your anger, which is a God-given emotion, and God wants us to be angry. There's a time to be angry. When things happen to us, and it's okay, by the way, if that wrench slips, to get angry. It's not okay to throw that wrench. I mean, I guess it's okay to throw the wrench, but to throw it and break something, or, you know, I mean, you could hurt somebody. It's not okay to slap somebody. It's just not okay. It's wrong. It's anger out of control. And what we see here, king has anger and it's out of control. And because he has this anger issue, he deposes the woman that I think he later back thinks about. And man, I made a mistake. But he can't undo the mistake. And there's a lot of times in anger you can't undo your mistake. What's done is done. I think every person who's ever killed somebody has done, I think, anger. The reason behind it, right? Why else would you kill somebody? You don't kill for the fun of it. Well, there might be, you know, a couple people that fit that category. They're just crazy. But most people that I know in prison for murder, and I know a bunch of them, it's all been because of anger. Let their anger get away from them. So anger, if it gets away from you, you can get into real trouble. By the way, you hit somebody, you can go to jail. Even your wife. Hit your wife calls the police, you're going to jail if she's got a mark on her. Yeah, you're going straight to jail. No ifs, ands, and buts, you're going to jail. And so we have to have control over our anger, because if we don't, we're going to make dumb decisions sometimes, right? To throw something, put your fist through a wall. Now you got to fix the wall. I mean, that was dumb, right? And we've all done dumb things being angry, right? None of us in here are perfect. We've all done some stupid things. But what we're told is we got to get a handle on this thing, because if we don't, it's going to control us, and we're going to get into some serious trouble, and we're going to have some serious regrets. And that's what this king has. And so, just looking back over this text, we see the sin of pride, the sin of drunkenness, and the sin of anger. This is anger out of control. Anger that's controlled is fine. It's when it's not controlled that it's not fine. And so this morning, this afternoon, I'm just so used to being here in the morning. So if we have anyone that needs to respond to the invitation, maybe you're struggling with some of the sins we talked about today. This is a safe place and a good place to come and confess and to say, I need help. And I need brothers and sisters to rally around me and help me. We will do that. If you need help, come as we sing.